It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we've had a series of conversations about our health through the decades. Today's decade we're honing in on is the 30s. We're looking at the mind and body changes that happen in this decade and how to get primed for future decades. So what changes in your life have you made you feel good in your 30s? Are you exercising more, eating different foods? How often do you visit the doctor to check for heart disease or other conditions that start to emerge? Join in with your medical questions throughout the hour, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Michael Dolan is Executive Vice President and Medical Chief Operating Officer for Gunderson Health System. He practices internal medicine, and he joins us from our La Crosse studios this morning. Dr. Dolan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
So people in their 30s today are around the front end of the millennial generation. Are you noticing any different patterns in their health concerns compared with patients from, say, Gen X or the baby boomers?
Not necessarily. I mean, health is really the same no matter which generation you come from. I think that the newest generation is a little bit more in tune with how to keep their stress level down, maybe compared to my generation and the generations that followed. So I think in that regard, they're much more in tune with their mental health, which hopefully bodes well for them as they enter their 30s.
I wonder why that is. What does stress do to us?
Stress is actually one of the biggest contributors to a lot of diseases. Stress can play a role in hypertension, heart disease, strokes, diabetes, overeating, weight gain. Stress oftentimes makes us cut back on our exercise level, which then leads to increased weight gain and feeds all of those other diseases I mentioned. So stress is a really big deal and probably one of the key things we need to learn to deal with in our 30s, which is hard because, of course, there's a lot going on in our 30s. It's a transition point for our life where we're going from literally our peak physical health to a time when we are absolutely being pulled in many directions.
Right, because there's the family element, there are career responsibilities, and trying to figure out what that career is looking like. So how common are people seeking professional help with mental health, maybe for the first time?
Probably not enough, because if you look at the mortality statistics for this decade of life, suicide is still number three on the list as far as the most common causes of death at about 11%. That means 11% of those that pass away in their 30s are dying of suicide. And I think there might be many factors that play a role in that. One of them is the fact that we are, despite the fact that we are more connected to people, I think that we're becoming more socially isolated. And as human beings, we are very social creatures. We need that social interaction. And unfortunately, even with all of the electronic connections and social media, we are still becoming a much more isolated group of people. There are people I talk to that sit in an office and never talk face-to-face with another human being throughout their workday. So that's a huge change and a huge shift. The other issue is that I think that we are starting to recognize that we are in an absolute danger zone as far as the number of behavioral health clinicians that are available to take care of people. We are constantly looking for therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists, and we've actually started to put behavioral health clinicians into our primary care practices in order to really get them on the front lines with patients that might be suffering from mental health issues.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Dolan, who practices internal medicine and is a top administrator for Gunderson Health in La Crosse. He joins us for a conversation about staying healthy in our 30s. So what questions do you have for the physician? Are you in your 30s now? Are you looking ahead to this decade of life, or are you looking back from a later point? Call in with your questions, your thoughts at any point this hour, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Dolan, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes are pretty rare causes of death in our 30s, but can they start to affect more people's health during this decade?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that the 30s are really the start point for when people are approaching middle age, where a lot of those diseases manifest themselves. And despite the fact that we rarely hear about 30-year-olds with heart disease or cancer, it does happen. Cancer is actually the second leading cause of death for individuals in their 30s. But it's not usually the types of cancers that we think of as people get older. It's more unusual types of cancers. So in men, testicular cancer right at the top, lymphomas, melanoma, a type of skin cancer that's very significant, and colorectal cancer. And then in women, lymphoma again, breast cancer, cervical cancer, melanoma, and colorectal cancer. About 11% of all deaths in that decade are attributable to cancer. However, only 4% of all cancer diagnoses occur in this age group. So it's still relatively rare, but we definitely see it. And a lot of the health habits that we can talk about later will actually help diminish your risks of cancer down the road. So I think it's an important decade to try and prevent that. With heart disease, the scary thing is that we're seeing more and more 30-year-olds with heart disease. And that is actually scary. I wouldn't say that it's an epidemic, but we are seeing an increasing number of people presenting with chest pain and undergoing cardiac catheterization and having heart disease diagnosed. I've actually taken care of people who were in their 30s that died of a heart attack.
Wow.
So it does happen. It's just not as common as something that occurs later on in life, typically in the 50s and 60s. Just remember, heart disease is still the number one killer in the U.S. And while we're doing a great job decreasing the number of deaths related to heart disease, it still is happening. And it's in the younger group, it's actually happening more in women than in men, which is really significant.
How are we doing with diabetes? Because there is the obesity epidemic.
Absolutely. In fact, that was one of the things I wanted to make sure I mentioned. It used to be kind of an adage or a guideline that we would start screening for diabetes at age 40. I can tell you that I start screening for diabetes in the 20s when I see patients because with the obesity epidemic, we are seeing more and more younger people with type 2 diabetes. And I would say that that is especially true if you are overweight, if your BMI is over 30, you absolutely should be getting your glucose checked on a regular basis. But yeah, we are seeing, along with the obesity epidemic, we are seeing an epidemic of diabetes type 2.
Do you find that patients don't realize that they are pre-diabetic when they come to you?
Absolutely. In fact, for most people, even when we diagnose them with full-blown type 2 diabetes, many of them are asymptomatic. So it's a very common scenario. People are actually shocked when we tell them that they're diabetic.
We're talking about health in your 30s with Gunderson Health internist Michael Dolan as our guide. Are you in your 20s and dreading your 30s? Why is that? What makes you worry about this next stage of life? Are you hoping to have kids in your 30s? Why did you decide to wait until after your 20s? How are you and your partner getting along in your 30s? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in a moment with more health in this decade right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. And if you're just joining us, we're exploring the biggest health issues to be aware of in the 30s decade. Some research says that how we maintain or maintained, past tense, our health and well-being during our 30s will largely determine our health for the rest of our life. Are you looking back on your 30s? What would you tell someone heading into this decade? What do you remember about your health in your 30s? How are you feeling today? Join in 800-642-1234. Internal medicine physician Michael Dolan stays with us to tackle your health questions in this decade. Let's go to the phones now. Bryn is joining us from North Freedom. Hi, Bryn.
Hi.
What's your question?
I was wondering if there were any recommendations kind of with insurance, essentially to get screenings that wouldn't normally be covered until an older age covered with family history. Specifically, in this case, I'm talking about colon cancer.
Thanks so much for that question. Dr. Dolan, what about having a history of something in your family? Can you get those screenings early?
Absolutely. In fact, there are very well-documented and laid-out guidelines for screening individuals for colon cancer who have a prior history of or who have a family history of colon cancer. There are certain syndromes like Lynch syndrome. In fact, I recently diagnosed a 32-year-old person with Lynch syndrome related colon cancer. And so for those individuals, they get screened on a much more frequent basis starting at a very early age. There's a polyposis syndrome X. Those individuals have to get screened basically starting 10 years before the age at diagnosis of the youngest affected relative. So if you have a relative that was diagnosed with that syndrome at age 42, you actually need to start screening every 3 to 5 years at age 32. If you have a first-degree relative before age 60 who had colon cancer, they recommend screening every 5 years starting 10 years before the age at diagnosis. So if they were 45, that means you start screening at 35. If you have two first-degree relatives diagnosed with colon cancer or advanced polyps, then actually you need to start screening, again, 10 years before the earliest age at diagnosis or starting at age 40. And again, the normal average risk person doesn't start colon cancer screening until age 50. So if you have a family history and it's well documented, you absolutely can qualify for colon cancer screening at an earlier age.
Bryn, does that answer your question?
Predominantly. I have had a colonoscopy, and I could actually have two, but the second one didn't seem to be covered in the same fashion that the first one was. Does that change? I mean, can I be approved the first time and denied the second time, or should I be appealing my insurance?
Well, start by appealing. I think it's always reasonable to appeal. The issue may be one of terminology. So sometimes insurance companies look at your first colonoscopy as a screening colonoscopy. In other words, you don't have any known diagnosis, and it's just being done to look for the possibility of precancerous polyps or colon cancer. But once you then carry a diagnosis, so I don't know if you had colon polyps found at the original colonoscopy, then it sometimes shifts from a screening to a diagnostic colonoscopy, and then it's subject to your deductible and co-pays and everything else. And so I think sometimes that terminology gets people for that second colonoscopy. The same thing happens, actually, if you don't do colonoscopy, but instead you do one of the other screening tests like FIT testing or Cologuard. The problem there is that if that screening test is positive, oftentimes then the follow-up colonoscopy, which needs to be done as a result of that positive test, that is now going to be a diagnostic test, and it's going to be subject to your deductible and copay. So you do have to kind of take all of that into account as you figure out, you know, what's my best strategy for screening for colon cancer.
Bryn, thanks for the call. As we talk about health history here for a moment, if you're able to ask your parents or ask your grandparents for health histories, what do physicians especially want to know?
So actually, knowing your family history and your personal health history is probably, for me, one of the top things that I focus on at any kind of visit for really anybody in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, because we're learning more and more that so many diseases, even diseases that we never thought had a genetic component, are very strongly tied to your family history. So I think that you really need to ask questions. If you have access to your first degree relatives, your parents, your siblings, and your second degree relatives, such as your grandparents, aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews, and then your third degree relatives, which are your first cousins, you need to really delve into their history and create a little bit of a pedigree of what your family history looks like. Because so many of the diseases that we see as people get older, especially cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, runs in families, and there are genetic bases for these diseases. I think of a patient of mine who was in her late 60s, and both parents had diabetes. Every one of her seven siblings had diabetes, but she did not. And every year I told her, you are going to have diabetes when you get older. It just isn't. It hasn't happened yet, but it's going to happen. And when she turned 74, we diagnosed her with diabetes. There is a very strong genetic component to a lot of diseases. Cancer, I think of breast cancer, colon cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer. It's really important that you know that family history and that you convey it to your primary care clinician so that they can then gauge, okay, what are you at risk for going down the road and what things should we be doing now to really either prevent those things from happening or at least be able to detect them at an early stage when we can do something about it.
We're talking this hour about health in the 30s decade. Dr. Michael Dolan practices internal medicine in La Crosse. What questions do you have about medical screenings, about nutrition, sexual health, or how the body changes as we age? What stories can you share? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's talk about sexual health. There's a lot of attention on educating young adults about sexual health and the risks of sexually transmitted infections. By our 30s, are people less likely to contract new infections?
I would say that overall that's probably true, but a lot of it depends on what relationship you are in. So again, the 30s are marked by a transition to more permanent relationships, marriage, having children. And so we have less opportunities and exposures to contract diseases. For a lot of the typical sexually transmitted disease screenings, they really stop after the 20s unless you're in a high-risk group, so someone who has multiple sexual partners. And so we see probably fewer new diagnoses in that age group, but we may see some residual sexually transmitted diseases that were contracted maybe in your teens and 20s, including HPV, herpes simplex, et cetera. So people are still potentially dealing with some of those. But as far as new diagnoses, it probably starts to tail off in the 30s. I think it still needs to be part of anytime you have any type of a physical exam with your primary care clinician, I still think talking about your sexual health and your risk factors for STIs is really a significant part of that visit. And if there is a high risk, I think that testing for HIV, syphilis, chlamydia, gonorrhea are all pertinent. A lot of people know this, that as sexual health extends into the 60s and 70s, we're seeing a lot more STIs in individuals in the 60s and 70s than we ever have. And so there's really no age group that's immune. It really just boils down to what is your risk for contracting an STI.
How can men and women protect themselves from HPV? Because that, according to federal health authorities, is the most common sexually transmitted infection.
It is, and it has really, really serious consequences. Hopefully, people get vaccinated when they're younger. The newest vaccine, actually, that was approved by the FDA was actually the age for approval was extended from age 26 and under all the way to age 45. So if an individual is maybe in a high-risk group and they haven't received the HPV vaccine, the first thing I would say is absolutely, up to age 45, get the HPV vaccine. HPV, there are multiple strains. The newest vaccine actually covers 9 strains, but there are multiple strains that are associated with a variety of cancers, including cervical cancer, oropharyngeal cancers, which it's the fastest growing cause for oropharyngeal cancers in the U.S., as well as anal and rectal cancers. So HPV, you know, common thing. People may try and make it trivial, but it is a significant health problem that you can actually do something about when you're younger and all the way up until age 45.
Talking with internist Michael Dolan, what do you wonder about your health in the 30s? Join in 800-642-1234. Stay with us. More conversation about our health, how to stay well, here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about health in your 30s here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting acquainted with how bodies change in this decade and what to watch out for. Maybe you're living it and noticing extra weight, feeling harder to shake, fertility becoming more of a concern, especially since women over 30 start to see potential for decline. What questions do you have for the physician about your 30s? Bring them on, 800-642-1234. How are you and your partner getting along in your 30s? Are you struggling with the stage of life, or are there advantages? Do you feel happier in your 30s? Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Gunderson Health internist Michael Dolan stays with us from La Crosse, talking about the ups and downs of this decade. Dr. Dolan, let's look at pregnancy. Compared to past generations, more women are having children in their 30s. How do you guide patients on whether to wait until their 30s to have children?
Well, I think when to have children is a personal decision for individuals and their partner, and really is sometimes determined by life circumstance. I was 31 when we had our first child, so that was just essentially a result of getting married later in life and the schooling and education that I needed to pursue my career. So I think that as more and more people pursue advanced education, you're going to see the shift to much more later pregnancies, which then requires a little bit of preparation. So when I see my female patients who are contemplating having children later in life in their 30s, we talk about the fact that it might be more difficult to get pregnant in your 30s. The human body is designed to really get pregnant in the 20s, and it's a lot easier for the body to go through that process. And so you have to be ready. You need to be at a reasonable weight. You need to be fit. You need to have a good diet. And you need to be up to date on all of your routine screening tests and vaccinations so that you can enter pregnancy really in very good shape. It's certainly doable, but it's a fact of life. More and more people, the average age for a male to get married for the first time is very close to 30 years of age now. So this is just something that we're going to see more and more as people put off marriage and having children into their 30s.
Yeah, advanced maternal age being 35 and older, how much do the odds of pregnancy for women change during their 30s and being fertile?
So up until 35, things are actually fairly reasonable. But after 35, it is much more difficult to conceive. And the other issue is that you start to see an increase in certain birth defects like trisomy 21. And so there's really there is a risk as the female body ages to later pregnancies and even being able to get pregnant after age 35.
How often should people in their 30s visit the doctor for regular checkups?
Yeah, that is really, there are no hard and fast guidelines for that. If you go out and read the literature, you can find people that say it should be yearly, and you can find people that say it should be once every 5 years. And I'm of the philosophy that it really depends on what kind of risk you're in as far as your future health. So in general, I do not believe that most average risk healthy people need to go to the doctor every year in their 30s. I tend to tell my patients in their 30s, I don't need to see you more than once every 2 to 3 years. And I think that's a reasonable time frame as long as they're doing the things that I think they need to do to maintain their health. There are certain things we have to do on a regular basis, so we do need to check some laboratory studies. But even there, cholesterol guidelines require, if your cholesterol is normal, the guidelines state you only need to check that once every 5 years. We need to keep you up to date on your vaccinations. We need to make sure that if you're a female that you're getting screened for cervical cancer. So there are a lot of things that we do to keep you healthy, but I don't think for the average person it needs to be every year. And again, I think if people come in and get a physical every 2 to 3 years in their 30s, they're probably going to stay on top of their health.
Farah emailed to say that she's in her early 30s and she is not going to have children because of the expense. She's approaching 40. And Farah says that things are starting to fall apart, but Farah refuses to go to the doctor unless something is really wrong. Do you see people avoiding the doctor because of perhaps the expense at this age? What are those consequences?
So if you look at the things we talked about earlier that people die from in this decade, like cancer, those cancers that I talked about, lymphoma, melanoma, testicular cancer, breast cancer, cervical cancer, those are all cancers that are actually very treatable if caught early. The survival rate for early stage melanoma is 98%, testicular cancer in the 90s, lymphoma in the 90% range. So the thing is that these are all cancers that for the most part cause physical changes in our body that we can notice if we're paying attention. A new breast lump, a new testicular lump, any swollen lymph node that's not going away, blood in the stool, a mole that's changing or growing in size or looks abnormally colored. These are all really simple things that we can pay attention to. And if you have those things, absolutely, you just need to go in and get those checked out because it makes a huge difference in your chances of surviving that cancer if that's the case. So, but yes, there's no question that there are people who avoid going to the doctor because of the cost. And they're afraid, some people are just simply afraid of what they might find when they go to the doctor. And That's a real problem that we haven't fixed in this country.
We're exploring health in the 30s with Dr. Michael Dolan. He practices internal medicine at Gunderson Health in La Crosse. What changes in your life have you made to feel better in your 30s? Are you exercising more or eating different foods? How often do you visit the doctor to get checked for high blood pressure or other issues that start to become more common in the 30s? 800-642-1234 is the number to join in. Let's go to Stephen now, joining us from Whitefish Bay. Hi, Stephen. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. It's more of a comment. About a year ago, I went plant-based, based on a lot of research that I've been reading. I'm in my early 30s, and knowing that my grandparents and my parents and other family, a common theme is high blood pressure and high cholesterol and all this other stuff. I looked at more from the diet side. I'm like, what was the typical diet that everybody was consuming, and everything was heavily surrounded by animal products. So about a year now, I've been without animal products, and all my testing has come back. Everything is at optimal levels. I've been losing weight without even trying, and just overall more energetic, something that I'm encouraging other family members to do as well. Maybe not go full plant-based like I did, but cut out a lot of these animal products that have been shown to come with stuff that we really don't need, like all the growth hormones and antibiotics that the animals get and so forth. And
Stephen, to be healthy. Yeah, Stephen, thank you so much for bringing that. Stephen, who went vegan at age 31. Dr. Dolan, with a plant-based diet, what should you bear in mind with nutrition?
Actually, I think Stephen has made a great point and one that I wanted to make sure that I covered, and that is that there is really good, strong evidence that a vegetarian diet helps to lower your risk of heart disease dramatically. Even a diet that has a little bit of meat in it, like the Mediterranean diet, which is primarily vegetables, fruit, and healthy fats like olive oil, can reduce your risk of heart disease. So diet is so key, and you really, if you think about it, you're just starting to raise a family in your 30s, your body's starting to change, and you're about to enter middle age, and it is an ideal time to start to shift more towards plant-based diet. I think for many people that can be hard, but for the most part in our society with things being supplemented with vitamins, maybe that you can't get with just a pure vegan diet. I think that most people can live very healthily on a vegan lifestyle.
Stephen, thanks for bringing that. Let's look at bone loss. Bone loss becomes a bigger concern as you age, but in your 30s, are you still able to build bone mass to help you out later in life?
Absolutely. In fact, we reach our peak bone mass in our 30s, and so it is it is critical that we keep that in mind as we're in our 30s. The way to do that, make sure you're getting plenty of calcium and vitamin D, and then weight-bearing exercise, so walking, running. It's just really important that we focus on our bone health in our 30s because that will pay off as we get into our 60s and 70s.
What about muscle? When does muscle mass start deteriorating?
Typically in the 40s, mid-40s for men, and about 5 years later, early 50s, typically as women enter menopause, they start to notice that they're losing muscle mass. But our muscle mass definitely starts, it peaks in the early 30s and then starts to fall off. So that's why it's really important to maintain a healthy exercise program in your 30s. It's really key if you want to maintain a really decent weight and if you want to maintain your muscle mass and your bone mass.
We're talking about health in the 30s with internal medicine physician Michael Dolan, who stays with us. Did you have more trouble grappling with the fact that you were entering a new decade of age? How have you dealt with that fact of aging? Still time for your questions about your health in this decade, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about health as a 30-something here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're continuing a series of conversations on health throughout the different stages of life. We've been going decade by decade. We've zoomed in today on the 30s. We're learning about how to avoid illness, prepare for peak childbearing years, get set for continued strength in future decades. So what do you want to know about health and staying well in your 30s? Are you working to manage a chronic disease? What questions do you have for the doctor? Join in 800-642-1234. Dr. Michael Dolan practices internal medicine, and he's helping us out on health in these years. Let's go back to the phones now. Marcus is joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Kate. So I turned 40 at the end of this month.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I was actually contemplating on how much of an accomplishment is it making it 40 years, but, you know. So what I've noticed with my friends, family members, et cetera, is that the ones that have stopped moving tend to complain more about their injuries, their aches, their pains. And I personally believe that keeping moving and staying active, even if it's just taking the stairs instead of the elevator, parking a little further away, anything to get a little extra exercise or get that extra movement, I found is incredibly beneficial. And I've noticed that there's a big difference between those who do things like that and those who don't. The second thing is that I would say is it's about having a positive mental mindset, because if you think you can, you'll find a way. If you think you can't, you'll find an excuse.
Marcus, I love that. What a great contribution there. What about exercise?
So, as I said earlier, exercise is key, and a lot of individuals that hit their 30s and are busy pursuing a career and raising a family, it is the first thing to go. And when you have worked all day and put in a lot of hours as you're developing your career, you come home, you've got children, they need your attention. It's much easier to choose that than it is to say, hey, I should go exercise. And so I think the key in your 30s is you need to make movement or exercise part of the priority list. You don't want to take it away from your family, but you can include your family. We used to, when we were in our 30s and we had three kids, I can remember doing a 5K and pushing one of the kids in a stroller. And it just makes it makes it part of their life, and it actually then kind of puts a seed in their mind about how important exercise is. So you can do things together as a family, bike riding. We did a lot of bike riding when our kids were younger. And now I watch my kids as they're older, and they are absolutely active. And it's because they saw that and they grew up with that. And so it's important that we pass that on to the next generation. I also love what Marcus said about balance, about the mindset, because recently a friend of mine shared a quote, and I loved it because of its simplicity, but it comes from Isha Sadhguru, who is a poet and author. And what he said was that there is no work-life balance. It is all life. The balance has to be within you. And I think the way I interpret that is that how we spend our time needs to reflect the things that we hold most important in life. And when our actions don't reflect what is inside of our heart, then our lives are going to lack balance. And as a result, that affects our mental health. And so I agree with Marcus. You have to have the right mindset as you hit your 30s.
Dr. Dolan, Alzheimer's and dementia are much bigger concerns later in life. Is there anything we can do in our 30s to help prevent these diseases?
So avoiding dementia is a very broad category. There are many types of dementia, of which Alzheimer's is probably the most common, but there are many others. And it's pretty well documented that if you can avoid hypertension, cardiovascular disease, strokes, diabetes, you actually will have less of a chance of developing dementia as you get older. And since many of those diseases take root in our 30s when we start to develop our unhealthy habits of no exercise, poor diet, weight gain, there are absolutely a lot of things you can do. But there are other things that we probably forget about, which is never stop learning. Make sure that you are doing things that stimulate your brain, make your mind, get those connections going and keep them open as you get older. And nutrition. Good nutrition definitely plays a role in preserving your mental health.
Dr. Dolan, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, Kate.
Dr. Michael Dolan is Executive Vice President and Medical Chief Operating Officer for Gunderson Health System, and he joined us from WPR's studios in La Crosse. The Milwaukee Police Department's budget has been in the news, but victims of gun violence and trauma might see a doctor before a police officer. Corrine Hess spent a night at Frederick Hospital to observe the people on the front lines.
It's Wednesday night at Frederick Hospital. Dr. Mark DeMoya is the chief of trauma surgery, and he's in the middle of a 24-hour shift. The surgeons at Frederick have four or five of these a month. Tonight, DeMoya is the surgeon on call. He's doing his rounds in the surgical intensive care unit.
They said he was a victim of road rage.
Got shot.
And so he got shot in the head, and he got shot in the chest, and he's a lucky human.
DeMoya and one of the residents are talking about a delivery driver who was shot on August 27th on Milwaukee's south side. A Milwaukee man has been charged with first-degree reckless endangerment. The case is pending. DeMoya says one of the bullets hit the man's vertebrae in his back.
The front part, not the spinal cord, but the front part of the bone, and then kind of ricocheted up towards the aorta.
Everyone brought into the emergency department has six people assigned to them, two on each side, one at their head and one at their feet. Everyone has a role. DeMoya calls it controlled chaos.
Within that chaos, though, there is a framework that is very much a systematic approach to the trauma patient.
Surgeons left the bullet inside of the driver. DeMoya says more damage is done when bullets are removed from a body. But doctors were worried the bullet could eventually move and hit the driver's aorta. So they put in special netting to protect his organs.
It's not the bullet itself, it's the path of the bullet where your injuries are that you need to repair.
DeMoya estimates about 90% of the gun-related injuries in Milwaukee are treated in his emergency room. As of early October, there were 321 non-fatal shootings in Milwaukee. That's down about 16% from the same time period last year. Motor vehicle crashes and falls are the most common type of injury, but there's at least one shooting a day in the city. Earlier this year, local hospitals in the city launched the 414 Life program to address gun violence in Milwaukee. About a dozen people, like Tonia Liddell, work as community liaisons in some of the city's most violent neighborhoods. Liddell wears a pager, like DeMoya, and responds to the emergency department when there's a shooting. Liddell's godson was killed at the age of 16 due to gun violence.
That's one of my motivating factors of doing this work.
As of early October, Frederick had 73 cases that were de-escalated by violence interpreters like Liddell. DeMoya says it has worked out great.
And oftentimes there can be some gangs related, there can be relationships that are involved, and they go into the neighborhoods and actually engage the people involved and then try and talk things down a little bit.
The police department has also changed its approach. Before, they would have treated what happened to the delivery driver as a shooting, but now the police treat every shooting as a potential homicide. This means conducting weekly case reviews and working with community agencies to research and help solve those crimes. Here's Police Chief Alfonso Morales.
A homicide and a non-fatal shooting is a difference of a couple of inches of where the bullet hit.
When patients come into the emergency department, doctors know they are experiencing the most frightening day of their life. But DeMoya says doctors go on automatic pilot.
The emotional side of it, when you see somebody that's, you know, either shot or in a bad car crash, gets put on hold so that you can move forward and really provide the care that's needed.
Once a person is stabilized, Frederick has another group of caregivers who help patients cope with their psychological scars. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we'll hear part two tomorrow about Frederick Hospital's trauma psychology program and what it's like at a level one trauma facility, and Milwaukee's violence prevention program in the Office of Violence Prevention's 414 Life program. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.